Wondery Plus subscribers can listen to Generation Y ad-free right now. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or Apple Podcasts. Listen to a bold new take on George Orwell's classic 1984 on Audible. Starring an epic cast with Andrew Garfield, Cynthia Erivo, and Andrew Scott, and featuring Tom Hardy as Big Brother. Plus, a haunting original score by Matthew Bellamy and Elon Ashkari that takes this thrilling production to the next level. Experience an immersive listening experience like nothing you've heard before. This chilling tale of constant surveillance, thought police, and rebellion is more relevant now than ever. Big Brother is watching and listening. Hear why those who control the past control the future. Listen to George Orwell's 1984 on Audible now. Go to audible.com/bigbrother.
There are days like today where I am just too busy to get outside and go feed myself. And that's where DoorDash comes in. It's super convenient and they bring the food to me. Also, I don't like paying delivery fees. So I have DashPass. DashPass is an exclusive membership from DoorDash that gets you unlimited $0 delivery fees on eligible orders and members-only deals and discounts, all for only $9.99 a month. DashPass actually pays for itself in two orders on average. DashPass makes it easy to save at restaurants, grocery stores, and all your local favorites. Open the door to $0 delivery fees and savings you can't get anywhere else. Sign up for DashPass today only on DoorDash and get your first 30 days free if you're a new member. Subject to change, terms apply.
Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app to listen ad-free.
From Wondery. How you doing tonight, Aaron?
I'm doing all right, Justin. How are you feeling?
I'm doing better than Anthony Sowell.
Yeah. If anyone remembers, we covered Anthony Sowell quite a long time ago on the podcast. He was a serial killer who murdered 11 women and kept bodies in his home.
He was referred to as the Cleveland Strangler, and he just died in prison. He died of some terminal illness. That's all I could find so far.
Yes. And back in the day, we had talked with an author by the name of Robert Sberna, who's just a great guy. His book was excellent. I would definitely recommend Robert Sberna's House of Horrors book. So, Justin, we have this blog. Our blogger, we've talked about her because she published a book, which is pretty cool. And one of the recent blogs that she wrote is about a case from January of this year, and it involves a man who went missing in San Francisco.
Okay.
It's about a man who is 50 years old named Christopher Wojtel. Now, his family was concerned about him. He was known to be very generous. He would help people out, whether it be money or anything else. You know, as you know, sometimes people that are very generous and willing to help out strangers, well, sometimes things go awry, and then we don't really know who to track down, who was the last person they were seen with, right?
And sadly, nice people get taken advantage of, and yeah.
Yeah. And his family, when they can't get a hold of him, then they contact the authorities. And while the San Francisco Police Department is figuring out what they want to do with it, his family plans to head out there, as well as they hire a private investigator. So part of the investigation here brings up that there are cameras. They're able to find out that he did show up to his apartment with, I think, a bottle of wine. And so they know he went in there, but the cameras never captured him leaving. Now, when they check the door, the security chain was latched from the inside.
Ah.
So this is what we call a locked room mystery at this point, right? This happened several days after the Capitol riots. I'm sure everyone remembers that being in the news. It dominated everything. Well, he was concerned about this. He was afraid that the Capitol riots would spill out everywhere else and that he might be in danger. So he started exhibiting paranoid behavior. and was talking about running away. But again, his family's like, no, no, no. There might have been stuff going on, but he wouldn't just disappear because he loved his family. I don't want to drag this on too long, but they perform a search of the apartment as well as the apartment building, and they come up empty. But there was one man that he took a liking to whose nickname was Blood.
A name like Blood is a little foreboding.
Yes, you're not wrong. And of course, looking through the CCTV footage, they also spot Blood going to that apartment before Chris got there. And this is, I think, a day or so before. So it's possible that he waited inside that apartment. Here's the thing, though. Very recently, and this is just days ago, Christopher Whitell's body was discovered during a second search of the apartment complex that he lived in. Now, I'm not saying he definitely murdered him. This investigation is not over, but I'd say he is definitely the number one suspect in this case. Lindsay said she will be updating this post as more information is released. When she originally put it up, they hadn't found his body yet. So the case is still developing.
We're brought to you by Audible. Audible app makes it easy to listen anytime, anywhere, while traveling, working out, walking, or doing your chores. I usually listen to Audible when I'm on a plane because it's the best way to keep my mind off the boredom and claustrophobia of being in a plane. I'm currently listening to The Long Walk. It was one of Stephen King's first books that he wrote under Richard Bachman. It's an incredible story about teens who are volunteered to go on a long walk. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog. Right now, new members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/GWP or text GWP to 500-500. That's audible.com/GWP or text GWP to 500-500.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
So, Aaron, tonight's case is one that really sparked my interest. In December of 2006, a man goes missing. About 4 months later, he's found bound to a tree, and he's been burned to death. Now, this is kind of out on a ranch, out in the middle of nowhere. Most people's initial reaction is this is some sort of hate crime. But it gets far more deep than that. So with that, what are we talking about tonight?
Tonight, we'll be talking about the death or possible murder of Dr. Stephen Hodia. This was in Chadron, Nebraska.
Stephen was a mathematics professor. He'd grown up in Minneapolis, Minnesota. He had two sisters. He ended up moving to South Dakota for a while and lived there for about 7 years. And he had actually just moved to Nebraska not too long before this event, right?
Yes. He had moved there to teach at Chadron State College. In 1985, Dr. Hodia graduated from Black Hills State University, summa cum laude. His major was mathematics, and he minored in political science, psychology, and theater. In 1987, Dr. Hodia earned his master's degree. So we keep calling him Doctor or Stephen, but this is a highly educated man, and he has a background teaching. He taught in South Dakota at Augustana College, and he also worked at a computer firm in Sioux Falls from 1994 to 2000. He was very technical, great at teaching, and I think really moving to Nebraska gave him that chance to take over a department, you know.
In a freak accident, March of 2005, he was ice skating and he fell and broke his hip. After that, he kind of had trouble walking, like over anything that was just like not a level grade. You know, he wouldn't be doing any rock climbing or anything like that. It's caused him a lot of pain, you know, probably limited his mobility a little bit. And then in January of 2006, he was actually hospitalized for depression and a suicide attempt. But he seemed to bounce back after that, earning a doctorate in mathematics from the University of Nebraska-Lincoln. And that's when he moved to Chadron, Nebraska.
He started off as an assistant professor of mathematics there. Chadron is in the northwestern corner of Nebraska. It's considered pretty remote and had a population of about 5,600 in 2006-2007.
I would refer to it as a small town myself, but I've been through there and it's pretty remote, but it's very beautiful too.
Despite the hip injury, Dr. Hadia really got around by walking, because at some point his car broke and instead of getting it fixed or whatever, he just walked.
He had a bicycle too, but yeah, he doesn't have to go that far, so why buy a car?
It sounds like the doctor was pretty practical. So he would walk 1 mile to work and 1 mile back. And despite stories about him having trouble adjusting to the kind of life that Chadron offered, I've heard it described as quiet. But, you know, he was trying to fit in. And he even ended up joining the Chadron Community Choir. And people said he really seems to enjoy teaching and was always open to hearing from other instructors, other professors on better ways to work with students. He would often stay late.
Everyone said that he was sociable. You know, they said he had a dry sense of humor. He was really into puzzles and Rubik's cubes and discussing high-level math problems, which you couldn't shut him up. He wasn't that shy. They say that he was a people person. He loved to talk to people and he loved to help people.
And his favorite sports team, the Minnesota Twins.
That's where he was from, right?
Let's get into the case, Justin, because here's this professor getting, I guess, a fresh start and at a pretty good place. You know, Chadron is a great little town and he's now a professor there. But on December 4th, 2006, Stephen began his day as he normally would. He got to work at 8 in the morning. He was teaching by 9 a.m. And then in the afternoon, he was working with a student to schedule a makeup test. And then at 5 o'clock, he was seen near a Pizza Hut on West 3rd Street. And at 6 p.m., he was in his office again. But where was he seen that evening?
He was caught on a security camera at an ATM. He was withdrawing $100. This is close to his apartment. By somewhere between 9 and 10 p.m., a woman saw him leave his apartment, and he purchased a 7-pound bag of charcoal from a local grocery store. The store clerk knew him because he was a regular there. You know, it was right by his house. And at 11:41 p.m., his work computer was logged into. It appears that he was doing something. And, you know, it's his work computer, so it's password protected. You know, I don't think it's going to be some rando person that broke into his apartment or, you know, wherever it was. So we know at 11:41 p.m., December 4th, 2006, he was alive.
You said we know he was alive. That means something happened between December 4th and December 5th of 2006.
He failed to show up for class the next day. And this is unlike him. He was reported missing. And police, they went to his apartment, looked around, didn't really see anything out of place. They found his bicycle. So they assumed if he wasn't home, then he had just walked. They didn't really do thorough searches because, as they put it, he's an adult. He can do whatever he wants. but they did have like, you know, a bolo out. Like if you see him, this guy's missing. But whether or not they actually patrolled the streets looking for him, I don't think it went that far.
Justin, this goes on for a while. From December into January into February, no one knows where Steven's at. And there were some searches conducted. People were interviewed. No one could quite figure out where he could have went to, because again, it's not a big place. And they know that his car wasn't working, so it's not like he drove away. And the town is small enough, they say, that if he did leave town, someone would have known.
I mean, if he walked out of town, it's surrounded by country, narrow country roads. It's, you know, it's pretty isolated. So if he did walk out of town, he probably would have needed to hitch a ride or get someone to give him a ride. And of course, his family, they haven't heard from him. His friends have not heard from him. And almost 4 months later, we're into March of 2007. And what happens then?
There were a couple of ranchers who were looking for a runaway steer. They didn't find the steer right away. What they ended up finding was a burned body. Now, this area, Pine Ridge, had been burned by wildfires the previous summer. So what they were looking at, they knew, was a fresh burn. This, what appeared to be a burned body, was in a ravine. So they called the authorities. And of course, when the investigators showed up, they found this body that was down on the ground, face down. It looked like the ankles were crossed. And then the arms were kind of pushed out in front as if the body was going to hug something. They also found a mostly empty bottle of peppermint schnapps, an unopened bottle of water, the charred remains of a flashlight, a gob of melted plastic, and a Tupperware-like container that looked like it could have contained a sandwich at some point. And this body had been tied to a tree. So it's very mysterious. The ankles were tied and the torso was tied, but the hands were not.
And next to his body, they found charcoal. It appeared that the charcoal had been used in this fire.
So at this point, I'm sure they can guess this might be the missing professor. But what a horrible way to die. So their first thought is, could this man have been murdered? The medical examiner was able to confirm that this was Dr. Stephen Hodia. He was badly burned over most of his body from, as they say, his head to his toes. But the official cause of death was smoke and soot inhalation in combination with thermal injuries. And they also were able to confirm that that bottle of peppermint schnapps, he must have been drinking from it because his blood alcohol level was shown to be extremely elevated.
Now, they tested the bottle for DNA. They found Stevens. They tested his clothes, and it appeared that they had some sort of accelerant on them. Now, whether or not that accelerant was peppermint schnapps or something else, it's hard to tell. But they did find the receipt from the grocery store confirming the date and time that he purchased it. Based on all the comparisons, the charcoal that was found at the scene would be the same charcoal that he bought from the grocery store the night he disappeared. They went through his computer, they went through his emails. Nothing seemed out of the ordinary. They also noticed that he hadn't packed anything in his apartment. He had perishable foods out, things like that. So he wasn't planning on going anywhere. He wasn't planning on leaving.
So by checking and finding an accelerant, that could lead them to think that this was a deliberate act by another party, right? It could be that he was murdered, plus the fact that he was bound. But they checked the bottle and only his DNA was on it. He's the one who bought the charcoal. So these are kind of almost contradictory pieces of evidence at this point. The police definitely need more information. Now, I do know for a fact that they have more information that they haven't released in relation to their findings, But that's how it goes. If it's an ongoing investigation, they're not going to just tell everyone, here's the type of accelerant that was used. Because if they were to find a good suspect and they started talking, they could then match what they're saying to their evidence, including evidence that no one else should know but the detectives and a possible killer.
And I'm thinking about this, Aaron, and it's northern Nebraska, December, when he disappeared. It's really cold out. So I don't assume somebody's going to go out and go camping or have a little campfire out in the countryside.
Yeah, this pasture.
Yeah, this is just not a normal activity somebody would go do.
This pasture, as far as I know, was about 3/4 of a mile from the college. So would you say that possibly the investigators could be out of their league here, considering that it's a difficult case?
Oh, I'm sure that they don't have a lot of murders in their town. Whether or not they have the resources and the forensic teams to handle something like this. So they call in the Nebraska State Patrol.
They get assistance from Nebraska Attorney General's office. And this is the part I love, Justin, because so often we read about a case and the detectives already have their minds made up in a way. They know where they're going to focus the investigation. But on this one, they say they're just treating it as a homicide because they can't really get anything to make sense. So by treating it as a homicide, they will broaden their efforts to solve this case rather than settle on something that may be expedient.
And I'm glad they're doing that because on the face of it, it looks like foul play, looks like a homicide. And when you just do the numbers, and he's a mathematician, people usually take their own lives via OD or firearms, and then hanging, and then you go down the list. Setting oneself on fire is not typical in a suicide. They're definitely locking down the scene and collecting evidence like they should.
Something else terrible happens to the Hadia family. On March 12th of 2007, Stephen's father died after a bout with dementia. And his family said that they had hoped to conduct a double funeral so they could say goodbye to both Stephen and his father. But because this is an active investigation and they're still collecting information, Stephen's body wasn't released to them during that time. And investigators swore that they were putting countless man hours into the case. But as they work this case, they keep coming up with more questions than answers.
I mean, this is just such a odd scene to come across. And this area he was found in, it's not a lot of people out there. So rumors run abound. I mean, Stephen was divorced and he hadn't really dated anyone since then. And Stephen was also a little effeminate. So people were speculating that he might have been gay and that this was a hate crime. But his friends and family are saying he seemed to be very heterosexual his entire life. There you go.
And furthermore, you understand that just because people say he wasn't gay doesn't mean he can't be killed for being gay, even if he isn't gay.
That's not totally off base, Aaron. I had a friend, he was actually dating a female roommate of mine. He was out at a bar one night and he was very effeminate. He was an art student, but he wasn't gay. But I guess some guys at the bar thought he was. And as he left the bar, they attacked him, beat him to a bloody pulp, even cracking his skull open. It was technically a hate crime because they thought that they were beating up a gay man, even though he wasn't. So I get how the rumorville here starts.
People who hate, they'll find any excuse, even ones they make up, to hurt someone. So we can't discount a hate crime at this point. On May 7th of 2007, Stephen's family was finally able to bury him. This was in Spearfish, South Dakota. And this funeral was attended by members from the math department at Chadron State College. A quartet from the college also sang during the service. Dr. Hodia was buried in Rose Hill Cemetery, and his gravestone reads, "The Theory Guy."
We're brought to you by ZipRecruiter. So the other day, Aaron and I were trying to get concert tickets to a show we really wanted to see. And I waited before I bought my ticket. And guess what? I missed my chance. And that's why you have to act quickly or somebody else will get it instead. It's like hiring for your business. If you want to find the most talented people for your roles, you have to scoop them up before the competition does. So that's why the best way to do that is ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter finds qualified candidates fast. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/GenY. ZipRecruiter's powerful matching technology takes center stage to identify top talent for your roles. And immediately after you post your job, ZipRecruiter's smart technology starts showing you qualified people for it. Amp up your hiring performance with ZipRecruiter and find the best fast. See why 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a qualified candidate within the first day. Just go to this exclusive web address right now to try ZipRecruiter for free. ZipRecruiter.com/GenY. Again, that's ZipRecruiter.com/GenY. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire.
So the Dawes County attorney hosted a press conference on May 8th of 2007. And up to this point, the newspaper articles, and we've read many of them, really don't tell you anything. So at this press conference, the media is really listening intently because they're waiting to see if any more information is going to be released. What do they find out?
Well, at this point, they are not finding any leads or any evidence that anyone else was involved. They're revealing that there weren't any footprints, there wasn't any DNA, there wasn't anything that indicated there was anyone else out there with Stephen the day or night that he disappeared.
My takeaway was they were going to lay out all of the things that they can't tell you about this case. We can't tell you what the accelerant was. We can't tell you what he was bound with. Although they did say it was not barbed wire because that was the speculation. Justin, you and I talked about this, and I asked you, what would bind someone to a tree but not burn? And it sounds like a riddle, but what did you come up with?
I came up with just fencing wire, you know, just metal wire of some type. There's been some speculation that it was electrical cords, like an extension cable or something like that.
And there's this idea that he may have done it himself because his hands weren't bound. And it would have been easy for him to set up the bindings to the tree and then to get to the tree and then bind himself around the torso and around his ankles.
It's still hard to wrap your head around somebody tying themselves to a tree and setting themselves on fire. There's a lot of ways to take your own life, and this is not the easier solution for anyone to attempt.
The county attorney maintained that this case was still being treated as a homicide simply for the fact that it leaves the case open so that they can hopefully figure out what really happened. But they're not putting down a manner of death yet. That's undetermined. And then there's this plea to the public. If you know anything, if you've seen anything, please come forward, let us know. Now, from May till August, this is what the journalists had to work with in the town. And in August, here comes this Dawes County attorney again, and he hosts another press conference. And this is where the public learns about the charcoal briquettes and about how they can see that Stephen had bought briquettes that may have been the same kind the very night he disappeared. So again, it sounds like they're trying to say he might have done this himself, but they maintain that they have no official stance on this. They're just treating it as a homicide simply to have the best chance of solving this. And they reiterate, we have a tip line. If you know anything, please let us know. But according to the data, they're not getting tips, are they, Justin?
No, nobody has any information here. And this is really, I mean, anytime you set up a tip line or any kind of reward or anything, normally they're flooded and they're not getting any leads.
Now, my first thought is maybe he wasn't well liked. Maybe no one wants to be involved, but According to the information we found, he was well-liked. There are accounts of some strange goings-on. There was a student at the school who, not long before this happened, was bumped into by Professor Hadia, and that's not like him. He just bumped into the student and kept walking. No sorry, no nothing like that. So there are some weird things going on there, but people liked him. And so the lack of tips just means this is the most mysterious case this town has ever heard of. So I guess it leaves it open to speculation. Justin, what do you think happened given all that you know or what little you know about this case?
Honestly, right now, you asking me this question, I'm giving you my current opinion. My opinion can change daily or hourly on this. But earlier today, before we recorded, I tried burning liquor in my kitchen. I just poured a little bit in a bowl and set it ablaze. And some orange schnapps, which is like, you know, I think it's like 60 proof, didn't burn. Then I had some other liquor that was 80 proof, and it lit on fire just fine. Peppermint schnapps is typically 100 proof, which to me means it's got a pretty decent flash point, which is the ignition point. And also, we don't know if he had other accelerants, if he had charcoal lighter or something like that. But he was drunk. His blood alcohol content was very high. Was he drunk because he was trying to build the courage up here to set himself on fire? I don't know. A lot of people don't think that he could have walked out to this area, this meadow, because of his hip problem. But he walked all over town, right?
It was about a mile walk to the college and then a mile walk back. So yeah, that's where I feel like the alcohol is the key here. We don't have any evidence of other footprints, of other DNA being involved in this case. When he bought the charcoal, he was by himself. Granted, someone could have been outside, but you know, he could have asked for help if he was in there alone. What did they have over him if there was someone trying to control him? I just don't see that scenario, really. I know there are a lot of questions that need answering here, but just based on what I know of this case, I feel like the alcohol is the key. So we know he had a hip injury, and we know he could walk, but most of that walk was very level ground. So the way I look at it is, if he wants to go somewhere where he's not going to be found right away, meaning rescued, if this is his final walk, I think that's where the alcohol can serve multiple purposes. One, it can deaden any kind of discomfort that he has on this walk out that will definitely not be on level ground. It can also build up his courage if he's getting ready to take his own life. And yet, despite my saying I feel like this is a suicide, it's very questionable that someone would take their own life in this manner. I get the binding yourself. Maybe he just wants to make sure he can't just up and run away. But to burn yourself to death? I mean, the only thing I can guess is he brought accelerant of some kind, either the alcohol or perhaps he used that sandwich container to bring some accelerant, and was using it to easily start a fire, maybe hoping he could inhale the soot, that smoke, to take his own life, and he ended up catching fire. That's my only guess. If this is a suicide, I think the burning, we know he had thermal injuries that happened while he was alive, I think those were an accident. I think he intended to die by the inhalation of the smoke and the soot.
Well, and that's why I'm sort of torn on whether or not the accelerant they found on him was the peppermint schnapps or if it was lighter fluid, because there was melted plastic on the ground. I mean, you can get lighter fluid in a plastic bottle. The charcoal, the peppermint schnapps, all these things added together. And when you add in that he had a problem with depression and a previous suicide attempt, it's definitely possible. I mean, it's definitely possible that he bound himself because his arms were free. It's possible for him to walk a mile. He walked all the time. So it's not that outlandish, but the method, as you said, is very outlandish.
In December of 2007, Stephen's sisters, Sharon and Emily, did an interview with the Kearney Hub. We're always curious to know what family think when a family member has mysteriously died. And quite often we hear that they believe that their siblings or uncles or son's death was murder. What did the sisters say when they were thinking about this case and maybe coming to some sort of conclusion?
Well, they ended up doing an interview, and they obviously agreed that the circumstances around his death were extremely bizarre, but they did accept the findings here. They wanted to see the photos of the crime scene because when you just hear it, it sounds horrible and heinous. But if you see, you know, him bound and the way he was bound, it kind of gave them a little bit of closure. And one of his sisters said that she visited the scene, you know, the area where he died. And she said, "I saw the truth. And the truth hasn't been pretty, but I needed the truth." They're accepting the findings of law enforcement and the investigators.
Well, the findings of the investigators, I think, is more of almost a private affair. Like, I think they sort of believe that this was a suicide, but for the sake of the investigation, left it as a possible homicide just to keep looking for answers. And they maintain they've spent hundreds and hundreds of hours on this case. They just haven't been able to close it. But this is something that seems to be the majority opinion, is that this was a suicide. Now, some things have happened since Dr. Haudia died. His family donated his math books to the University of Nebraska-Lincoln, and a math scholarship was created in his name at Black Hills State University. But there was a documentary and a book written about this case. What do we know about the documentary?
It was Dave Janetta, and they interviewed people in the town, his friends, about his disappearance. They did a good job with this. They really tried to, I guess I would compare it to like Missing Moore Murray. They went around and they tried to get a feel for the town. They tried to get a feel for how people saw the doctor and what his mental state was the day of. Just days before, people were talking about speaking with him and they didn't notice anything was wrong.
Now, the book was finished in September of 2013. It was written by Poe Ballantyne. And the book is titled Love and Terror on the Howling Plains of Nowhere. He's not from the area, but he did move there to write this book. And it's one of those books that if you go into it, and I've read much of it, but if you go into it thinking, I'm going to learn all about Dr. Stephen Haudia's death and the investigation and theories, you're going to be disappointed. But this author has his stamp all over it. It's really more of a memoir of his own, where the Haudia case is kind of like a thread that goes throughout it. And so if you approach it from that angle, I think it's a much more satisfying book. But Ballantyne believes that Stephen had been murdered. And he said, the local police department was under fire for a lackadaisical missing persons investigation. By voicing the opinion that Stephen's death was a suicide, they perhaps thought their low scores and the possibility of a kill in our midst might go away. Oh, the Haudia family aren't necessarily fans of Ballantyne's book. And some people refused to speak with him because they didn't like the direction he was taking his story. But the way I look at it is, when you have a mysterious death, you need to allow other opinions. You never know when someone will say something that might advance the case, whether it's just in your own mind or officially. And so, while I don't necessarily agree with him, I think this case doesn't have enough answers.
The hate crime angle, you know, rumors run amok. You know, when they found out that he was still bound and set on fire, the common assumption was he was bound by barbed wire because that's all that's around there. And that was very reminiscent of Matthew Shepard. So this is how rumors like that can take hold and drive a narrative. But his family says he wasn't gay and he didn't appear to have come into contact with anyone after he logged into his computer. So we go back to the suicide angle. And so then we can go to just a homicide angle. You know, it's weird circumstances. There was one study that said in 2004, out of 32,439 suicides, only 177 involved fire or burning. Of those 177, some were attempts and some were successful. It said that Stephen didn't like pain. He didn't like to feel pain. So, like you said, we have alcohol here. But people talked about how there was no indication that he was still suffering from depression, that he had made any plans to take his own life because he had scheduled with a student for a makeup test. He had made plans for the future. He had gotten involved with the community choir. And then there's the whole idea that he wouldn't have been able to walk that far and get down into that area by himself because of his hip injury. It's a very steep grade. But the ranchers that found him, they're saying, yeah, it's kind of hard to get back in there, but it's not impossible. But forcing somebody against their will to go back there would be even harder than somebody just walking on their own, you know, on their own 2 feet.
So much is made of the fact that he didn't like to walk over uneven ground or difficult terrain. But if he's planning a final walk and he's drinking schnapps, I think we can toss that out. This isn't like he's going to start doing this every day. This is a final walk, possibly. And one of the ranchers that had found his body, Andy Curd, said, where he was, it's just hard for me to picture how you could get someone of his size, and Dr. Hadia was 6'4", 230 pounds, back there unwillingly. It would have taken six guys. So again, how difficult would that be? It's easier to explain that the doctor walked there.
Yeah, because the only way I see this as being homicide is if the doctor took a walk and was drinking, got drunk, happened to have charcoal on him and a bunch of other stuff, and then was hitching a ride and then got a ride from literally a homicidal murderer who then held him at gunpoint and took him down to this little ravine and bound him and set him on fire. Because he didn't really have any enemies. He didn't have anyone in town that hated him. There isn't roving gangs or Satanists or whatever else people come up with that could have targeted him. So it's sort of like the Maura Murray case. It's like, what happened to her? Did she get into the wrong car, or did she just run off and disappear into the wilderness on her own? And in this case, it's, we found him. We found him in a very bizarre situation, but it's easier to come up with he did this on his own than somebody else did it to him because of the evidence, because of the way it all went down. Because if somebody had bound him to the tree, they would have bound his arms. And then if he got himself loose from those restraints, well, those restraints weren't on the ground anywhere. So it was obvious that there was only the one around his torso and the one around his ankles.
The only other thing to speculate on is why would he, if this was suicide, why would he walk out to this pasture? And I believe it's quite simply because he didn't want to take his life where possibly a student or someone he knew would find him. It would be someone who probably didn't know him.
when you're in that mindset, you're not thinking logically. You're just thinking, get away, build up the courage, and there's a tree or there's a little area where no one can see me. Okay, I'll walk over there. I don't think he pre-planned this. I think this was all just as he went.
Take a moment to get a word from our sponsor, Field of Greens. I like eating healthy, and I've tried a lot of different supplements. I've tried juicing, and I've spent a lot of money and wasted a lot of time. And let me tell you, honestly, none of those things ever made me feel better. With Field of Greens, it's a superfood that gives you nutrition the way nature intended. It's packed full of organic fruits and vegetables, not extracts. And when you're getting those nutrients, you can sleep better, notice things like your hair and your nails feel stronger, helps with digestion. You just feel better overall. My favorite flavor is the strawberry lemonade. I have a feeling you're going to love this product the way I do. But if for some reason you don't like it, they give you a 100% money-back guarantee. Plus, you can get 15% off your first order and free rush shipping. Visit fieldofgreens.com and use the promo code GenY. Promo code GenY at fieldofgreens.com. Fieldofgreens.com. Go check it out.
I think there could have been logic involved just simply because of where he chose to do it at. I mean, he could have done this at the college.
Well, I'm saying he walked away from town. So that's all the logic that was put into it. And then as he's walking, he just looks to the right and says, oh, that looks like a good spot.
Right. The spot does seem pretty random, but it's tough because it's not like we want him to have been murdered, but it's just such a sad story if it's suicide in the fact that this is how he chose to die. And again, I feel as though perhaps the burning was an accident, but that the fire was definitely intended to kill him.
Yeah. And like I said, Aaron, I'm depending on the day, I might change my mind, but I'd love to hear what our audience thinks. You can message us social media. We're on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, all those things, or you can email us. But yeah, tell us what you think and let us know if you think this was homicide or suicide. And if you live in the United States and you are suffering, you should reach out to the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline, which is 1-800-273-8255. If you live in the UK, there's the Samaritans. They're at samaritans.org. And there's another place called the Campaign Against Living Miserably, and it's thecalmzone.net. Multiple phone numbers out there. But if anything, if you have anyone to call, anyone that cares about you, you should reach out to them and tell them, because all of them would love to hear your voice and see you again tomorrow.
Subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you're listening right now. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app to listen ad-free. Hey, Prime members, you can listen to the Generation Y podcast ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today. Or you can listen ad-free with Wondery Plus in Apple Podcasts. Before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
Whether you're working out, walking, or running errands, Audible can help you keep your heart rate up month after month with their pulse-pounding collection of thrilling audiobooks that you can't hear anywhere else.
As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog, which includes thousands of titles. This month, check out the Audible original, The Space Within. It's a chilling 8-part story about a psychiatrist, Dr. Maddie Weil, voiced by Academy Award winner Jessica Chastain, who is tasked with unlocking the memories of a child who went missing for 7 hours. Maddie soon discovers that there are more who have faced similar experiences, and the truth of what is happening to them may impact the fate of humankind. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/thrill or text thrill to 500-500. That's audible.com/thrill or text thrill to 500-500.